This is Toby Sumter with your CrossPolitik Daily News Brief for Friday, March 6, 2020. Nothing is going on in the PCA, especially not in Missouri, not in St. Louis. Just shut up. The Missouri Presbytery of the PCA and Greg Johnson's Memorial Presbyterian Church are back in the news today with the revelation that they recently hosted the Transluminate Arts Festival. I mean, just all by itself, you just shouldn't do that. The event describes itself as, quote, a short play festival and celebration of transgender, agender, non-binary, genderqueer, and gender-fluid artists. What in the world? The event was held on February 27th and 28th and the 29th through March 1st at The Chapel, which is an event venue and ministry partner operated by, hosted by, Memorial Presbyterian Church, where our old friend, Pastor Greg Johnson, is the pastor, and Memorial Presbyterian Church was the host of Revoice 2018, the original Revoice conference. The plays that were performed at the Transluminate Arts Festival included a homosexual couple discussing their testosterone shots, presumably implying they are women trying to be men. I'm not sure. Another description reads, quote, Joe, a transgender man, and Shauna, a transgender woman, are married, and Joe is carrying their child. It gets worse from there. Oh, it's crazy. The bottom of the page includes a content warning. Plays may contain adult language and frank sexual situations. That's not adult language. That's childish. That's from the insane asylum. Language. That's not adult language. Adult language makes sense. Adult language is in complete sentences. It's logical. It's rational. And it also reflects the language of God. That's not adult language at all. That's just nonsense. Remember, Greg Johnson and Memorial Presbyterian were in the news back in 2018 when they hosted the very first Revoice conference, which said that they were meeting to celebrate LGBT plus. I think eventually they removed the plus sign. For some reason, I think they may be bigots, but we're not sure. And other sexual minorities, I think they might have also removed that line as well. And they wanted to help them live in the traditional biblical sexual ethic. If that sounds like a contradictory sentence to you, you wouldn't be the only one. Greg Johnson was interviewed by CrossPolitik, and you can find that discussion in our show archives at crosspolitik.com or on our YouTube page. Included in their breakout sessions were titles like What Queer Treasure Will Be in the New Jerusalem? This kicked up quite a dust storm, which resulted in Missouri Presbytery forming a study committee to investigate Pastor Greg Johnson and Memorial Presbyterian Church. This resulted in a Presbytery committee that ultimately found that Greg Johnson and Memorial Pres did not commit any grave or serious errors at Revoice 2018. And nothing that took place there struck at the vitals of religion, and it is too early to pass any judgment on whether the emphasis on the need for, quote, gay spaces is a grave or serious doctrinal error. The Missouri Presbytery also voted to commend the practice of same-sex back rubs, but promised to revisit the issue next year. Okay, they didn't really do that, but they might as well have. Likewise, the scandal elicited a response from Mark Dalby, president of Covenant Theological Seminary, the official seminary of the PCA, located in St. Louis, in March of 2019. Dalby responded to criticisms and questions about Revoice 2018, while he affirmed biblical sexuality in that video, you can look it up on YouTube, and he clearly identified homosexual identity, lust, and activity as sinful, his strongest admonition was clearly for those who have publicly accused Covenant Seminary of compromise. The video captures quite well why conservatives consistently lose ground in these discussions. President Dalby's most vehement condemnation was for people who may have shared speculations about Covenant's involvement or influence on Revoice. He effectively called the public questions and concerns abominations and perversions and vile affections, and called sodomy and sodomite lust and identity merely a sin. The clearest thing from the video is that God hates slander. He hates gossip, and he hates anyone who raises questions and concerns publicly that might make Covenant Theological Seminary look bad. So shut up. And there was not a word of rebuke for Greg Johnson or Memorial Prez or the Missouri Presbytery, any of them, for causing all the confusion, all the division, all the corruption in the church. Finally, remember that Greg Johnson, quote, came out as wishing he was a sodomite. Okay, he didn't quite put it that way. In Christianity Today, he came out and said he was gay last year, just shortly before repeating the same claim on the floor of the PCA General Assembly and received a round of applause. The Assembly of the PCA barely passed a resolution affirming the Nashville Statement over Pastor Johnson's objections. The Nashville Statement affirms biblical sexuality, even though it has some weaknesses. But then when another pastor read through all the major Bible passages on homosexuality in defense of his resolution, his speech was objected to, interrupted in fact, and it led to a formal complaint that was filed by a number of PCA delegates calling his speech intemperate. So notice that the great and heinous sin in the PCA right now is intemperate speech, which might even include passages from the Bible. And it certainly includes asking questions in public, raising concerns publicly about public events. Sure, homosex is technically a sin. Technically. But the real scandal is not churches hosting gay spaces and queer treasure inquiries and transgender, agender, fluid gender, whatever nonsense. No, the real scandal is people being bothered by it and asking Covenant Seminary if they had anything to do with it. Don't forget the political nature of all this. Jesus said that his people are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. The reason President Trump would have no problem appointing a sodomite to his cabinet is because the largest conservative reform denomination in America cannot speak clearly on this matter. The only thing they can say clearly is that you should talk very softly, and you should probably use a lisp, and only raise questions privately, and only then, after an even more private back rub, while remaining completely celibate. Don't worry, no grave or serious doctrinal error will take place. In other news, Ilhan Omar wants your children. From parentalrights.org, we learn that in February, Representative Ilhan Omar from Minnesota introduced a resolution, House Resolution 854, to call for the U.S. Senate to ratify the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. This whole thing should just make you sick. In so doing, she once more opened the door, or at least knocked on it, for international law to override parental rights in our country. Back on November 20th, 1989, the UN General Assembly approved the CRC, the Convention on the Rights of Children, and opened it for ratification. Within 10 months, the requisite 20 nations had adopted the treaty, bringing it into force. Since then, every nation except the United States has ratified the CRC. The United States signed the treaty under President Bill Clinton in 1995, signaling our intention to become a party to it, but it has never been ratified with the constitutionally required consent of two-thirds of the Senate, as our Constitution requires. So we remain the lone holdout. There are at least three solid reasons to give this convention a solid raspberry and put it in the round file, beyond the fact that Representative Omar is the one who has reintroduced it into Congress. I mean, that's kind of enough all by itself, and the fact that it came from the United Nations. The first reason, though, is the content of the treaty itself. The worst part is a provision that states, quote, in all matters concerning children, the best interest of the child shall be the primary consideration. But for the government to make, quote, best interest of the child its primary consideration, it must first decide, and it gets to decide, what the best interest of the child actually is. So in our courts today in the U.S., a judge or bureaucrat doesn't get to make that determination without first reaching a finding that the child's parents are unfit. They've been rendered, ruled, abusive or negligent. Until then, American law presumes, quote, that natural bonds of affection lead parents to act in the best interests of their child. You can see this, for example, in Parham versus J.R. 1979. So who decides what your child's best interest is? Well, at least for the time being, in our country, you do. Parents do, not the government. The CRC would change that by removing this presumption that favors parents and jumping straight to the part where a judge or a bureaucrat gets to decide in every case. The treaty also claims to protect a child's right to access information, which could be used to override a parent's efforts to protect their child from pornography or other harmful web content. It also claims to protect a child's right to access medical care, which can be used to cut parents out of their child's medical decisions, like, oh, I don't know, pumping chemicals into their bodies, like puberty blockers, or granting them access to abortions. Another appalling part of the treaty is the Committee on the Rights of the Child. This sounds like something straight out of A Brave New World or That Hideous Strength. Committee on the Rights of the Child. Just run away, run away. An oversight panel which was set up by the provisions of the treaty. Since beginning their work in 1990, the committee has exercised unchecked authority in deciding what the treaty does or does not mean and what nations must do to be in compliance. For example, when the treaty first went into effect, fewer than 10 nations worldwide had any kind of ban on corporal discipline. That is the biblical practice of spanking. And no nation expressed any concern that it violated the rights of children. But the committee, of its own accord and with nothing in the convention to support it, began telling nations that they were not in compliance because they had not outlawed corporal discipline of children in every setting, including the home. So, as a result, dozens of nations have since enacted such laws, believing it is their international treaty obligation to do so. And that brings us at last to the third and biggest reason this treaty is absolute trouble. Under Article 6 of our own Constitution, a ratified treaty becomes the supreme law of the land. It overrides the rest of our laws, the rest of our court's precedents. So ratification of this treaty, which for other nations is an aspirational statement at best, and for many such as Iran, China, and North Korea, a mere political smokescreen or virtue signaling, in America, it would have the effect of passing a massive new federal law on the family. Today, nearly all family law is still at the state level, and these statutes, as bad as some of them are in the states, are at least still bound by the Constitution and our courts to respect the role of parents as their child's first and best line of defense. Under the CRC, those laws would become the responsibility of the United States Congress, and respect for parents would be gone. Our system, the CRC system, would then depend on judges and bureaucrats to decide what is in a child's best interest as defined by Congress and ultimately as defined by the CRC. We've seen instances of this sort of thing already happening in Europe and in Great Britain. So ratifying the convention would leave it to that elitist foreign committee to decide when or if our treatment of children was acceptable and in their best interests. Right. A committee in Switzerland or wherever is supposed to know what is best for your child. Fortunately, there's no significant threat of the CRC being taken up by President Trump or sent to the Senate right now. There's no significant threat of this particular Senate giving its two-thirds consent. But lawmakers like Representative Omar are dedicated incrementalists and groomers. They know that the way to get this eventually passed is by bringing it up over and over and over again until everyone just gets used to it, until no one notices what's being done, and then it passes. Of course, Christians should oppose this kind of totalitarian nonsense with every fiber of their being, but they should also recognize that the government has already made a significant claim on your children by the very existence of the public school system, especially the Department of Education in Washington, D.C. Until that office is shut down and completely defunded, the feds are already claiming an interest in parenting your children, and that is wicked and evil and tyrannical. But the same thing goes for the state as well, and as my colleague Gabe, the Waterboy, has pointed out numerous times, it's also a bit of Republican insanity that continues to fund public schools that then disciple our children to be hard lefty progressives. It's just crazy. It would be like if we had a Muslim invasion and the Muslims opened up free schools everywhere and Christians just mindlessly sent their kids to the Muslim schools and then were continuously confused by why their kids were turning out Muslim. And the only proposal they brought to the table was, we need to give them more money. That's just insanity. The Republican Party needs to officially repudiate the socialism of public schools and begin working to defund and privatize them all. Until then, Republicans are all soft socialists, just without the cojones. At least Bernie is bold enough to admit it. This is Toby Sumter with Cross Politic News. You can find this show and all the others on the Fight Laugh Feast Network at crosspolitic.com or fightlaughfeast.com or on our app, which you can download at your favorite app store. Just search Fight Laugh Feast. Support rowdy Christian media and become a Fight Laugh Feast club member. And for a limited time, you can get your very own Fight Laugh Feast t-shirt. And these things, they look pretty rad. You can't get these anywhere else except by becoming a member while supplies last. You're also getting access to tons of content, including, most recently, 2.5 hours with David French at a barbecue joint in Nashville, over an hour with economist Walter Williams in his living room in Philadelphia, a couple of hours with Black Guns Matter Maj Toure and pastor, rapper Kurt Kennedy in a little bookshop in Fishtown, Philly, as well as Gary DeMars, God and Government and No Limits Eschatology, and our very own Worldview Shotgun series. You also get $100 off your registration for our first annual Fight Laugh Feast conference, where we hope to meet many of you in Nashville, Tennessee, October 1st through the 3rd. Go to fightlaughfeast.com and register now. I hope you have a great weekend.